Chapter 7 Deadly Delight. Even in a hurricane, the steersman must do what he can. Pelor Kaladin pulled the cocoon down. He placed his hands on the controls. He summoned all his psychic power into his warp eye. Imperator Ejuvami, he prayed. But he could make no sense of anything. There was only the raging, shredded jungle, a thick green sea shot with brilliant colours, through which he could see nothing, and which carried the wandering star along with it like a piece of flotsam. All he could do was try to keep the ship steady as it was dragged along. Despite warp currents not being material in real space, he had heard of ships being spun to destruction in such a maelstrom, torn apart by their own centrifugal forces. And indeed, the wandering star's inertial integrity field, necessary in any starship to protect crew and passengers from lethal acceleration and changes in direction, were having trouble coping. Ruglo, strapped into the co-pilot seat, shouted in protest as he was flung about. In panic, Kaladin dropped them out of the warp. Instantly, there was an audible rustling on the outside of the hull. Their eyes snapped to the external view screen. There was nothing to be seen except a mist or fog, through which vague patches of light suffused. Ruggalo diverted his gaze to the star tabulator, the navigational device which should have told them where they were. It, too, was confused, unable to recognise anything in the murk, its significator plate flickering out a succession of failed identifications. They had materialised inside the thick dust cloud on the edge of the eye. That was the cause of the rustling they could hear. Their manic warp speed had translated itself into a real space velocity that was a solid fraction of the speed of light. The dust was impacting on the hull, racing over it as if the ship was flying through a sandstorm. Abrading the adamantium shell, wearing it away, dust bullets, given extra mass by reason of the relativistic effect, punching their way through the outer shielding, which was worn and weakened by age in use anyway. Promptly, Kaladin dropped them back into the warp and concentrated again on holding the ship steady. And now he discovered for himself another phenomenon known to navigators, one he had heard of but never experienced before. The frightening moment when the allegory, as it was called, the means, private to himself, by which navigators' minds interpreted the warp, broke down and was replaced by something else. His subconscious could no longer see the warp as a colourful jungle. The warp storm had chewed that image into extinction. Briefly, he was bewildered, having nothing to hold on to, nothing by which to exercise whatever feeble control he could over the wandering star's movements. The inertial integrity trembled. Ruggalo hollered as they felt the ship tumble over and over, though in fact the real rate of tumble was probably hundreds or even thousands of times per second. Kaladin did not hear his friend cry out, and was not really aware of the spinning sensation. He had other problems. It was his first real experience of what the cocoon was for. It was not truly necessary for piloting or navigating. One could manage either without it. The cocoon was purely for the navigator's protection. As Kaladin's mind struggled to grapple anew with the impossible, his body went into convulsions, jerking uncontrollably this way and that. The cocoon wrapped itself more tightly around him, gently restraining him, preventing the wrenching spasms of his muscles from breaking his bones. It happened then. Something was emerging from what had been an incomprehensible tumult, something that would enable him, partially at least, to get his bearings again. Figures, faces, a three-dimensional sea of faces, millions of faces, grotesque, grimacing, some human, some half-human, some like the faces of beasts combined and mingled together, faces of all sizes, some bigger than the wandering star itself. The faces swirled and flowed, delineating the mad flow at the edge of the great warp storm known as the Eye of Terror. But that was not all. The faces were changing, transforming into a huge multitude that was one face over and over. His mother's face. Millions of times over. And to the faces were added his mother's body, apparelled in every form of dress he had ever seen her wear, or else naked, a shocking sight to see his own mother naked, swaying, cavorting, beckoning to him, dancing, grimacing as if in enticement. And among these endless duplicated mothers of his, there came squeezing through, as if pushing up from some fluid substratum, horrific-looking demons, with which his mother began performing a multiplicity of obscene acts, leering mockingly at Kaladin all the while. The warp entities had again read his mind. Once more, they were attempting to throw his emotional instability at him. At first, it worked, before Kaladin closed his warp eye in anguish, believing that this truly was his mother, multiplied and reproduced in the hell to which she had been condemned, made to couple with demons for all eternity. The ship began to tumble again, and this made him pull himself together, realizing that what he saw was but images taken from his own private nightmares. He forced himself to look back into the warp, attempting as best he could to stabilize the vessel. The infinity of writhing figures had vanished. Suddenly the turbulence had come to an end. The wandering star was being carried along on a steady course. Kaladin guessed that if he were to drop out of the warp now, he would find himself on the other side of the shield of dust which surrounded the warp storm, turning the stars within it as seen by the naked eye, from the planet called Apex 5, for instance, into a misty nebula. But he did not do so. His subconscious had given up trying to interpret the warp by means of allegorical scenes. The insane region within the eye defied all such exercises. Instead, he saw what appeared to be an entire vast universe of roiling, writhing, twisting curves in hundreds of colours, woven throughout a black immensity. But this was hardly an immensity as the mind could normally conceive it. This was an incomprehensible madness. He groaned aloud, his mind threatening to sunder. Then, just as he despaired, he began to understand what was happening. He was seeing in 8 dimensions. He had been subjected to training exercises such as this in the Scholar Navigationis, stretching the mind beyond the three-dimensional world of ordinary sense perception. It was said that only people with the Navigator gene could really do this, and then, not always. Kaladin was entranced. It was as though his brain had switched over into a new mode of seeing the spiritual realm, the warp as it really was. No warp entities were visible. Everything was purely abstract, a great loom of psychic spiritual forces, scattered throughout the vastness, vanishing into immense distances, were what appeared to be dark curving chasms, holes of negative existence. He understood these to be stars, together with their attendant planetary systems, islands of matter surrounded by gravity wells, places where, in the normal galaxy outside the Eye of Terror at any rate, the warp drive would not work, and demons could not directly manifest themselves. How things went here, Kaladin could not say. He twisted his head, looking for something else. Yes, there it was, filtering through the multidimensional chaos, faint, very faint and intermittent, much fainter than the stars of the eye when seen from Apex 5, but still visible, if only just. A pure white light, reassuringly pristine, peaceful and holy. There it was, even here, the saintly light of the Emperor, the Astronomicon. Kaladin had never been so glad to see it. While it still shone in his vision, however dimly, he would never be completely lost. Then, looking ahead, he saw among the labyrinthian curves a shining dot of pearly hue travelling ahead of him. He knew that hue. It was the signature that warp screens gave, seen from the outside. Almost certainly it was Gudrum's rainbow-coloured ship. Excitedly, he relayed the information to Ruggolo. "That gives us a chance. Gundrum or his pilot must know the way out of here."
"Can you drop us back so he doesn't see us?"
Ruggolo inquired anxiously. "No, we're being carried headlong." Ruggolo grunted, staring at the screens. They showed nothing but grey blankness. As far as the scanners were concerned, there was nothing outside the ship. Not even space.
Perhaps he can't see us anyway, he murmured. According to Gundrum, he doesn't have a navigator. That sister of his does it.
I don't believe that. Gundrum's ship seemed to be as much out of control as the wandering star. Usually, it was possible to leave a warp stream and proceed to a planned destination. A navigator would not dream of entering a current so fierce that he lost the ability to change direction. That Kaladin had done so within days of reacquiring his navigational ability was something he had difficulty in explaining to himself. He looked again at those dark patches of nullity, which in the warp betokened the presence of matter in real space. They looked as though it would be possible to travel to any of them in a straight line, but he knew that the impression was an illusion. There was no such thing as a straight line in the warp. As yet, the wandering star was only on the outer rim of the great Eye of Terror warp storm, being borne along its periphery like a leaf caught up in a whirlpool, and ahead of him, Gundrum's ship was being carried along in the same manner. Further in, there was probably more flurries, more irresistible turbulence, as one crossed from one stream to another. But Kaladin was not thinking about that. He did not want to venture any further in. At the moment, he was wondering how visible, astronomical or not, he was going to get out. There must be a way, he told himself urgently. Gundrum had managed it. He frowned. A well of nullity was looming up, an island of materiality, towards which the current was taking them. But something was wrong. As the grey glow of nothing engulfed them, it vanished. Instead, a white sun blazed forth. Kaladin glanced at the detector displays, at the gravitic intabulator, the radiation intabulator, the visual display, all set in their ornately engraved oval brass frames. A planetary system was set forth. Four worlds, one close and coming closer. Kaladin shook his head. With his warp eye, he could still see the screens of the painted ship. It looked as though the warp current was going to smash it into the planet, and the wandering star would not be far behind. It didn't make sense. The warp drive shouldn't work this far inside a gravity well. For that matter, a warp torrent shouldn't be able to flow through it either. Ruggolo was mumbling to himself. He turned to his navigator in bewilderment. Are we still in the warp, or out of it? We're in it, and we're not in it. Kaladin muttered, equally befuddled. No, that's not right. We are in the warp and in real space. Panic came into Ruggolo's voice as the implication of what he was reading on the tabulator struck him.
If we hit that planet, he gulped. Get us out of here, Pello!
Kaladin was already struggling with the controls in a desperate attempt to alter course. It was no use. The only thing he could possibly achieve would be to put the ship into a spin which would tear it to fragments. Personally, he preferred to smash into the planet with a velocity that would instantly convert it and its occupants into plasma, for the ship to disintegrate would first dump them alive in the warp, prey to demons.
It's no use, he sobbed. Pray to the Emperor, pray for the salvation of your soul.
Ruggolo slumped in despair. For his own part, Kaladin felt too numb to pray. So this was the end. He cursed himself for having listened to the fake rogue trader, someone with the stamp of failure written all over him. Miserable as his life was before, at least it was life. While these thoughts went through his mind, he noted that the environment open to his warp eye was again changing, becoming even more difficult to apprehend. A warp real space overlap. To the eight dimensions of the warp were added the four dimensions, three spatial and one of time, of ordinary space. 12 dimensions in all, impossible even for a trained navigator. Could the entities of the warp understand such an environment? If so, they had intellectual powers far exceeding the human. It was far too complicated for Kaladin to grasp, he whimpered, eyes rolling in his head, and gave up trying to interpret it. The great loom-like scheme surrounding him collapsed. Instead, he became aware of the white-hot sun casting flares into a space that was oddly coloured. A dark violet shot through with faint streaks of light, rather than the ebon black space he was used to. and of the planet towards which they were hurtling, looming ever closer. Where was Gundrum's ship? Had it already met its doom? No. There it was, so close they could see it with the naked eye. How was it they had closed the distance? How could the other ship have slowed down, in defiance of the warp current? He estimated they were less than a minute away from impact with the planet. Galadin could think of only one thing to do. He shut down the warp engine and attempted to drop back into real space. A violent lurch threw them both forward. The breath was knocked out of Ruggolo. Galadin, tossed about in his cocoon, felt something like a hammer blow in his head, and then lost consciousness. When he came around, Ruggolo was slumped in his harness, still dazed. A whistling, rushing noise invaded the cabin, emanating from the outer hull. The wandering star was no longer in space. It was speeding through the atmosphere of the planet it had been rushing towards, flying through the air on stubby wings and steadied by the automatic pilot. Galadin was astounded. How could the ship have decelerated sufficiently to negotiate the atmosphere in so short a distance? It should have fallen like a flaming meteor and ploughed into the surface in seconds, its exploding engines creating a crater miles across. He spotted Gundrum's rainbow ship soaring swiftly ahead of them. Galadin felt a stirring beside him. Ruggolo was recovering. The trader took stock of the situation quickly, without bothering to ask how it had come about. His eyes gleamed as he spotted Gundrum's ship. "Don't lose sight of them!" Galadin had taken over from the automatic pilot now. He eased their speed as he saw the other vessel do the same. Gundrum's ship dipped and went gliding down to a land and seascape far below. There was something curiously limpid about the atmosphere. It didn't seem quite like air, more like transparent crystal. There was no trace of a cloud layer. The glowing surface lay completely bare in the light of the sun. Both the painted ship and the wandering star were flying like atmospheric craft rather than landing directly using their real space main motors. That was standard when a moderately sized spaceship entered a planetary atmosphere on automatic, such as if the pilot was unconscious. Whoever was piloting the painted ship flew with flair and verve, even recklessness. The vessel snaked and jinked and dived for the surface. Galadin wondered briefly if it was trying to lose its pursuer, but no, that would be impossible without cloud cover. More cautiously, he followed, being less familiar with atmospheric flying, strangely enough, than he was with flying through the warp. Soon, the two ships were racing less than half a mile above a nearly flat surface. The planet seemed to have no mountains, no hills, no valleys. It was patchy, water and land mingling together in strips and rivulets. There was no definite sea or land masses. The colours were pastel, blue, green, and pale pink. From here, 200 miles under the air blanket, the sky showed itself as a deep azure, scattering the light of the dazzling white sun. It all looked perfectly normal, a habitable planet such as might have been of interest to the Imperium, were it not within the Eye of Terror. An expansive plain came in sight, carpeted with greenery. Gundrum's vessel had slowed so that its wings could scarcely provide enough lift to stay in the air. It tilted. A manoeuvring engine showed a hot white light, as bright as the sun overhead. Gracefully, the vessel set itself down. There was no point in trying to be discreet. There was nowhere to hide. Galadin carried out the same manoeuvre, landing no more than half a mile away. The two waited to see what would happen next. Ruggolo was tense. He felt trapped in his own ship, where a demon had entered his dreams and nearly materialized. He seemed to hear its enticing voice calling to him still. It was not lost on him that, despite changing his mind, he was still being forced to follow his original plan to follow Gundrum, as though drawn by some fateful compulsion. There was no movement. After more than an hour, a port opened on the hull of the multicolored ship and a ramp uncoiled. And that was all. No one emerged. Another hour later, and two carts, hauled by beasts of burden of some kind, appeared on the edge of the plain in the distance, accompanied by about half a dozen humanoid figures. As the party slowly approached the painted ship, It could be seen that the carts were piled high with cargo. Ruggalo's eyes gleamed.
Trade goods. This must be Gundrum's source.
Eyebrows raised incredulously. Kaladin rounded on him. Are you mad? After what happened to you, you can think of anything but escape. Ruggalo was not listening. He turned up the magnification primarily to look at the contents of the carts, then drew back in surprise. Kaladin followed his gaze. The people walking alongside the carts were not people at all. Their form was humanoid, but not human. Their skin shimmered with colours, like the scales of fish. Their limbs were unnaturally short and stubby. Their faces, if they resembled anything, were like the faces of frogs. Nothing about them, except for their upright and four-limbed form, which made them only vaguely manlike, suggested a human descent.
Aliens, Kaladin explained.
It made sense, Ruggalo thought. The Eye of Terror dated from the 25th millennium, no earlier. There must have been alien-inhabited worlds, as well as human colonies, in the region when the warp storm blew up, and they were still here. He chewed his lower lip. Kaladin, of course, was naive. Raised to think of aliens as evil, he probably would be shocked to know how many alien-manufactured goods free traders brought into the Imperium, not to speak of rogue traders.
Well, I sold an alien trinket to an Inquisitor once, he admitted aloud, though I'm not really sure he was an Inquisitor.
He heaved himself out of his chair.
Stay here,
he said as he left the cabin. When he returned, it was to show that he had been to the ship's armory cupboard. He was carrying two small las pistols, not military issue, but manufactured for civilian use, with mother-of-pearl hand grips and damascened barrels. He offered one to Kaladin.
Hide this about you somewhere. It's fully charged.
Kaladin had extracted himself from the navigator's cocoon, which he had rolled up. He stared at the mother-of-pearl stock without touching it. What are you planning to do? Kill Gundrum and steal his trade?
Not a bad idea, but impractical. What would happen if you tried to take us back to the Imperium?
That's easy to answer. A warp stream runs through this planetary system, and we're stuck in the middle of it. If I try to steer us out, the ship will be shaken to pieces.
Exactly. But Gundrum must know a way out, or at least his sister does. Whatever you say, she must be the navigator. We have to do a deal with him. We've no choice.
Angelica can't be a navigator and Gundrum's sister as well, Kaladin pointed out. If she were, Gundrum would be a navigator too. I don't believe she's a navigator anyway. I know if she were, he paused. How can you possibly trust Gundrum after what he did? Bringing down a demon on you? Probably using an alien artifact into the bargain.
There was a silence.
We don't really know if it was meant to happen, Ruggalo said shortly. Perhaps it was my fault for using the dream gem in the warp, like you said, with demons nearby. Perhaps the gems are harmless otherwise.
Ruggalo's mind was in a whirl. The demon's attack was receding in his memory, as if it had been no more than a nightmare. His original plan was nearing fruition. Kaladin sighed with despair. The alien carts had pulled up some distance from Gundrum's ship. A knot of people descended the ramp. Gundrum, Angelica, Fofo, and Coiler. Ruggalo thrust the lasgun at Kaladin again.
Take it. It's for our protection.
Without enthusiasm, Kaladin accepted the weapon, inspecting it briefly and placing it in an inside pocket. It was slim, designed to be inconspicuous. They left the cabin, climbed down from the port and stood in the shadow of the stubby wings, looking towards the rainbow ship. Kaladin, having already performed the ritual of protective sealing at the base of the wandering star, was nervously intoning one warding off evil prayer after another, a navigator's litany. Ruggalo glanced at the greenness carpeting the plain, which he had taken to be a variety of grass or moss, forms of verbiage common on many worlds. It was neither. It more resembled green pond slime and was smooth and slightly slippery underfoot. The air had a cold, wine-like quality, which was delightful to breathe and was perfectly clear, so that even distant objects were sharp to the eye. But as Ruglow turned to speak to his partner, he noticed something odd. The air seemed to ripple as he moved, as though it were liquid. A movement made him look up. A number of silvery creatures were gliding above his head. Not winged creatures such as birds or bats, but to all intents and purposes, fish. Moving with leisurely, sinuous motions, waggling semi-transparent fins. In other words, swimming. How could a fish swim through the air? Ruglow took a deep breath and waved his hand to and fro. Despite its odd rippling quality, the air seemed no denser than that which human beings normally breathed. Kaladin quickened the pace of his incantations when Ruglow pointed out the air fish to him, making the sign of the Emperor allowed only to navigators. He would be convinced, of course, that the phenomenon was unnatural. Ruglow cast his mind about for some non-magical explanation. Perhaps, he thought, the creatures had bladders filled with lighter-than-air gas to make them float. But they seemed too small for that and were moving too quickly. The small motions their fins made would have served to propel them through a liquid, but not through thin air. He reached out to grab one as it came near. It flittered away and evaded him, angling upwards. He returned his attention to the scene near Gundrum's ship. The drought animals, four-legged, striped green and yellow, but with faces resembling those of gorillas, had been unhitched and the wagons unceremoniously tipped up, spilling their contents onto the ground in twin heaps. The visiting humans had begun sorting through the piles, examining object after object. Ruglow touched his companion on the arm as a sign to follow and set out. As the pair approached, Gundrum straightened.
"By the roots of my desire, my good friends, the traders from the Strait Places. Yes, we have seen you following us, but why? Why?"
A weird, glaring expression, impossible to read, possessed his bony features.
"What irresistible desires do you come here yearning to fulfill?"
All eyes, alien and human, were on the two now. Ruglow's gaze roved briefly over the piles of goods on the green-coated ground. There was little there that he could recognize.
"So, this is the source of your merchandise," he ventured. "Oh, no. We have never been here before. We never know where we are going when we set out for the great and glorious Eye of Pleasure, or the Eye of Terror, as cowards call it. We go where our lords will us."
The statement alarmed Kaladin.
"You don't know how you got here."
"The roots of my desire brought me here. The delirious Lord of Pleasure brought me here. The winds of fate brought me here. Did I not tell you that space is different here in the great storm? Here, you do not fly by instruments. You do not fly by looking at what is around you. You navigate by faith. Faith in your desire. Here, everything responds to that. Is that not so, my sweet little sister?"
Gundrum placed his arm around Angelica's bare shoulders. She writhed with apparent pleasure, pouting coquettishly.
"Oh, dear brother, my dear brother," she breathed in a warm voice.
As if at her behest, a warm breeze blew over them, dispelling the chill of the air. Kaladin recalled the strange behaviour of both Gundrum's ship and the Wandering Eye. A shiver went through him. Could it be that some strange power, the warp itself, in some way answered to a pilot's emotions and wishes, picking out a destination and response to desires, perhaps even subconscious ones, and taking him there? The idea was both sinister and alluring. He wove a further protective warding sign, at which Gundrum laughed. The frog-faced aliens blinked. Gundrum's words went over Ruglow's head, however.
"You made a promise, Gundrum. I'm expecting you to keep it."
Angelica was stroking her brother's back.
"You did make a promise, Gundrum. But who to? Ask him if he used the dream gem."
She addressed Kaladin.
"And you might be the one who owes the debt."
Kaladin's paleness went even beyond his usual pallor. He thought he understood what Angelica meant. Ruglow, however, obviously took a different meaning.
He began to speak angrily. "Yes, that damn stone you gave me had something wrong with it. I was nearly killed." His voice dropped. "I suppose you do know how to get back to Caligula."
Gundrum laughed loudly.
"I travel on the routes of my desire. I throw myself on the whims of the gods. You, however, were drawn along in my wake. You are a piece of flotsam now. Your only hope is to embrace the great dark lords, the ruinous powers."
The pair recoiled at this. Fiercely, Kaladin gripped Ruglow's arm.
"This is an insane world, and here is an insane man telling us to abandon the Emperor."
Coiler, now dressed in some loose sort of jerkin, had been sifting through the alien artifacts. He glanced towards them before apparently losing interest, and resumed what he was doing. Foy, on the other hand, had become agitated. He was clenching his fists and stomping to and fro.
"Kill them, Gundrum. They're after our business. Why else do they follow us? Kill them now!"
He rounded on Ruggalo.
"I told you to stay out, didn't I? I've dealt with people like you before, so I have."
Involuntarily, Ruggalo's hand crept towards where he had secreted the last pistol. While this happened, he could not help but notice an increasing number of fish creatures gliding through the air around them. It was almost as though the entire gathering of humans and aliens was at the bottom of an ocean, with shoals swimming hither and thither. Fofo noticed his involuntary movement. He grabbed him by the arm.
"Mind what you're doing, friend."
Humming and laughing to himself, Gundrum had begun to perform a disjointed dance. Angelica too gave a trilling laugh as she stepped gracefully forward, easing Fofo aside merely by brushing her hand on his bicep.
"How crude you are, Foy, wanting to kill people by breaking their bones, stabbing and blasting them."
Her voice was warm and caressing, her green eyes hypnotic as she looked upon Ruglow with fondness and admiration.
"Fofo, you have no finesse here, my friend. Let me give you a better welcome."
Kaladin felt helpless, overcome with dread. He felt something awful was about to happen to his friend. He watched in a trance as Angelica halted in front of Ruggalo. She was swaying slightly. The trader was in even more of a trance, staring with enchantment at the movement of her live body. His eyes became saucer-like, taking on a hue of a deeper green than before. Then the horrible thing happened. Her body changed like some monstrous orchid, suddenly putting out new growths. Long, sore-toothed, crab-like claws sprouted where her delicate hands had been. Her feet too became elongated and two-toed, like those of a giant eagle. A long, tube-like tongue extended from her mouth and, most grotesque of all, from her firm, fleshy rump sprang a thick, flexing tail, ending in sharp barbs. Astonishingly, Ruggalo did not appear to find any of this repulsive. He was trembling with excitement. Kaladin reached for his weapon, but in a single swift bound, Fofo was behind him, clamping his arms in big, strong hands. Kaladin could hear him hissing with quiet laughter. Angelica took a strutting, bird-like step. Those awful claws reached out and seized him, as though he were no more than a morsel of food she was about to tear apart. But the touch of those razor-sharp, chitinous claws only made him delirious with pleasure. He moaned and reached out with a shaking hand, longing to touch her, longing to touch her breast. While the tongue, which was like a hollow tendril, swayed towards his mouth. Still, holding him by one claw, she released him with the other, using it to stroke and tease his body, causing him to lose all control and sag, while his eyes rolled up in their sockets and he whimpered in ecstasy. It was eerie to see how much this terrifying spectre was still Angelica. Wild delight came to her face. She raised one foot in a quick motion that was not quite human, placing the big claw against Ruggalo's belly. Kaladin saw that with one slash she could disembowel him, and very likely was about to do so. He struggled vainly to break free of Fofo, unable to reach the weapon in his inside pocket.
"Maynard, wake up! She's a demon! Use your gun!"
It was no use. Ruggalo was beyond recall, pleasured beyond any self-restraint he could muster. Kaladin opened his warp eye, even though it was hidden by the bandana he had donned before leaving the ship, and began to intone the exorcism prayer he had used before. Fofo instantly clamped a hand over his mouth, holding him close to his body with the other arm, so that all that came out was a muffled gurgle. Unwilling to see what he was sure was about to follow, he cast down his gaze. In so doing, he was witness to something unexpected. The slimy greenness on which they stood shimmered and was gone, clearing as if in a sudden chemical change. Replacing it was a flat, shiny surface, almost colourless, like the surface of a still stretch of water. Too late, Kaladin discovered that it was water. He instantly sank into it, as did Fofo, and the entire tableau. Ruggalo and the hideously transformed Angelica, the cavorting Gundrum, Quila, Kaladin in the grip of Fofo, the painted spaceship, the aliens, their carts and animals, and the piles of merchandise, all descended like a mass of rubbish thrown into a pond. The water closed over their heads. Kaladin felt Fofo release him. He tried to strike out for the surface, but could not. The water seemed thin and unresponsive to his swimming strokes or the kicking of his legs. Down and down he went. Looking up, he saw the roof of the ocean receding beyond reach and experienced the stifling panic of imminent drowning. Then his feet touched the surface. His heart bursting, he looked about him and saw that the scene of moments before had remained almost intact, but translated to the ocean bed. Ruggalo and Angelica had separated. Like Kaladin, Ruggalo was holding his breath and floundering. The aliens simply stood passively as before, undisturbed by what had happened. Gundrum and his party, albeit that they claimed to be strangers to this place, were waving their bodies from side to side in apparent enjoyment, their faces wearing whimsical expressions. No sand had been thrown up by their impact. The surface on which they stood was firm, carpeted with rust-like growths on which the bulk of the painted spaceship rested nearby. Here, too, were fish, flittering here and there. The water was limpid and transparent, the sunlight penetrating it easily. Kaladin could hold his breath no longer. He let go, resigning himself to the end. But no bubbles came from his mouth. By instinct, he expanded his lungs. He felt liquid fill his mouth, pour down his throat and infiltrate his lungs. The water was not cold, only pleasantly cool, even refreshing. He no longer had any sense of suffocation. He expelled the water from his lungs, drew in again, and then was breathing normally. Breathing water. Kaladin waved his hand through the water. Though it did not have quite the same consistency he would have expected, it still resisted the movement, more as like a liquid, not as air would. Angelica was turning somersaults in the air, giggling, swishing her tail from side to side. Gundrum continued his peculiar jerky dance, laughing as he did so.
"Did I not tell you? Nothing can be taken for granted in this realm. You are on a planet where air and water are the same."
Kaladin looked around for the wandering star. Yes, there it was, some distance off, also on the seabed. He supposed breathing water might be possible if it had a very high oxygen content dissolved in it, but that did not explain fish which swam through the air, or, for that matter, how Gundrum could talk underwater so intelligibly, instead of having the words come out in a series of gurgles. Or land that betrayed them by suddenly becoming ocean. Land, air, and water were all interchangeable. With poise and delicacy, Angelica set her feet on the waving green rushes. She flicked aside a fat fish covered in iridescent red scales, which had crossed in front of her face, and set her sights on Ruggalo once again. Her voice seemed even warmer as it was transmitted through the liquid medium.
"Pleasure and pain are the same. Pain is pleasure. Pleasure is pain. Come, my dearest one, my beloved Maynard. It is my will to pleasure you to death."
Standing there, currents of water wafting in and out of his lungs, Ruglow waited in anticipation, longing for the deadly, crushing caress of Angelica's crab claws. Kaladin stared too, no longer thinking of rescuing his friend. Instead, he was hoping fervently that once she had put Ruglow to his excruciating, ecstatic death, she would do the same for him. Ruglow went limp as Angelica seized him. With the buoyancy of the water, it took her no trouble at all to lift him off his feet with one claw. Her long, tube-like tongue began to play with his face, his neck, his ears, drawing loud moans from him that were embarrassing to hear. Her left claw had gripped him under his right arm. Now her free claw clamped itself onto his left thigh. Gently, playfully, she began to flex both claws, bending them a little. She was preparing to tear his leg off.
No!
Kaladin came out of his mad, erotic trance. He plunged his hand inside his black tunic, noticing for the first time that it was wet through. Out came the las pistol. Kaladin was unused to wielding weapons. It took him a moment or two to wrap his fist around the hand grip, release the safety, aim, and press the firing stud. Steam bubbled all along the length of the laser beam as it hissed through the water, but it failed to reach Angelica. Instead, it struck a fish nearly a yard long, which at the moment glided between them. The fish exploded as the water in its body turned to steam. Fragments of flesh, skin, and bone drifted to the seabed. Fofo roared in indignation. He seemed not to move, but suddenly a weapon was in his hand, buzzing savagely. It was a shorter version of a chainsword, a chain knife, as long as a butcher's cleaver, and Kaladin immediately imagined its teeth ripping through his flesh. He was terrified. He whirled round to bring the las pistol to bear, but didn't get in a shot. The chain knife cut right through the little gun, severing the emitter barrel and charge chamber from the stock, and nearly taking his thumb with it. Fofo laughed, waving the buzzing knife tauntingly in front of Kaladin's face.
That deserves a slow death, navigator.
Then Kaladin heard a long, lingering, agonized scream. It was not one of pleasure. It was one of realization. Angelica had begun the process of dismembering Ruglow. As he felt the painful wrenching of his joints, reality had returned to the trader. Yet, incredibly, that scream ended by turning into one of appreciation and gratitude as Angelica's heady hallucinatory powers took hold of him once more.
Angelica! That's enough!
The cry came from beyond them. The voice was Coiler's. He had ceased from sorting through the alien trade goods and had stood up. From beneath his robe he had produced a weapon far bulkier than Kaladin's discreet little pistol. Kaladin had rarely seen its like. It had a fat barrel, a cylindrical fuel flask, and a shoulder stock as well as a hand grip, although Coiler was ignoring that and wielded the gun like an ordinary sidearm. Flung aside by Angelica, Ruglow lay sprawling and groaning. With a look of glee, Angelica whirled to face Coiler, her wide saucer eyes staring, her transformed limbs thrown apart as if in welcome. Kaladin was not sure he had identified Coiler's gun correctly, until there came a vivid flash and a brilliant gout of energy, brighter than any flame, and water boiled so furiously that the scene was near to being obscured, until the roiling bubbles lifted themselves towards the overhead surface. It was a melter gun, also known as a fusion gun or a cooker, far more awesome than an ordinary flamer, firing a short-distance blast of submolecular thermal energy. Angelica took the blast full on. As it engulfed her, she gave vent to an ululating soprano scream that went rising and warbling in a prolonged aria, a celebration of pain and delight and shock and gratification. She should not have been able to utter any sound at all. She should instantly have been reduced to molten slag and steaming vapour. But when the scene cleared, Angelica was still there. Not the crab-clawed, eagle-toed demon now, but the fetchingly attractive woman she had been before.
Ah!
Smug rose from her chest and belly as the energy of the melter gun dispersed.
Do it again, Coiler!
Coyler, however, was directing the Meltagun's barrel elsewhere. Drop there now, Fofo. He trained the gun on Fofo and Gundrum in turn, one after the other. Gundrum stopped his dancing. Both stared at the barrel of the Melter with something like fear. This, at least, told Kaladin that Neva was a demon, unlike Angelica. Fofo did not obey Coyler's order fully, but with a flick of his wrist, the chain knife was silenced and disappeared into his clothing.
What ails you? By my roots, Coyler!
Gundrum said in a lugubrious voice. I come as far as I can, Gundrum, Coyler said wearily. You're all getting worse and worse. I'm quitting. Going back with these others. Get aboard the ship and leave. All of you. Fofo grimaced and roared, Traitor! Two things began happening at once. The water in which they were submerged swirled, making the shoals of fish eddy, and the back of Fofo's head also swirled, puckering until it formed a face, the face Ruggalo had seen in the drinking hall on Caligula, which he had taken to be a hallucination caused by the peculiar liqueur Gundrum had served him. Now he knew he had been wrong. It was real. The snub-nosed, old, young visage sought Ruggalo out where he lay on the sea rushes. The high, squeaky voice screeched,
I told you not to come. I told you, I told you. Now you're trapped and you belong to chaos.
Oh, Kyler,
Gundrum said in the same doleful tone as before, and ignoring the awful transformation as though it were perfectly normal.
You have cut off the roots of your desire. What will you do now? How will you find your effervescent delights without us to guide you? You are lost. No more lemonade for your soul.
With a sudden sloshing sound, the breathable water in which they were immersed drained away. The rushes, by some self-magic, transformed themselves into the same green slime the space travellers had stood upon before. Kaladin found he was again breathing air, but still, the fish swam around them. The plane itself had not restored itself as formerly. It was instead a mixture of dry areas interspersed with meandering streams. The wandering star stood nearby. Fofo was glaring at Coyler with hatred. He seemed unaware of the second personality expressing itself out of the back of his head. The exhortations from the rearward-pointing face reached fever pitch. Then Foifoi's head wobbled as it forced itself further out with an immense effort. A pair of shoulders appeared. Two small hands freed themselves and pushed back against the edges of the hole now showing in Fofo's skull. An entire human form was emerging. The abdomen and legs came free. A complete individual, resembling nothing so much as a year-old baby, but with an adult, if dwarfish, face, slid down Fofo's back to stand on the rushes. It was not completely independent. An umbilical cord led from the navel and back into the gape in Fofo's head. Having been so horribly born, the baby dwarf tottered towards Ruggalo, the cord lengthening and maintaining its grotesque connection. Soon the creature was trying to coax Ruggalo to his feet.
Are you all right?
It inquired plaintively.
Can you stand up?
Fofo still behaved as though completely unaware of this repulsive extension of his being. He looked questioningly at Gundrum, who shrugged and threw up his hands.
Come, my dearest and most delectable sister. Come, my ardent and trusty fellow traveller. Let us be away.
He turned and walked towards the painted ship with a peculiar high steeping gait. Angelica, who had been making mincing faces of invitation at Kaladin, blew kisses as she followed. Alongside her walked Fofo, the umbilical cord stretching behind him. And now the knot of aliens who, throughout, had remained immobile, even their animals reclining before the emptied carts, became animated and panicky. They went running after Angelica, their arms held out beseechingly, calling out in gurgling voices. Turning on them with a look of contempt, she flung out her arm in a gesture of dismissal and marched to the ship. For bizarreness, Fofo's departure far exceeded hers. As he was about to mount the ramp to the ship's port, the umbilical cord reached its full extent. Suddenly, it contracted. Fofo staggered back only slightly, but the effect on the baby man was much more dramatic. He went hurtling through the air and was jammed back into Fofo's skull with a loud, squelching sound, disappearing in seconds. The hole in Fofo's head had healed before he even reached the port, the skin smoothing over, the bristles of his cropped hair regrowing, so that there was nothing to show that the appendage mannequin had ever shown itself. Ruggalo came to his knees and began gibbering incoherently, his eyes glazed, all intelligence gone from them. He had been attacked by demons twice in one day, and his mind had broken. The spectacle caused something in Kaladin to snap too, bringing him out of the numbness which had overtaken him. He held out his hands to the clear, open sky. "By all that's holy, this can't be real. It can't be."
"It's real," Kyler answered him curtly, replacing the melter gun in its harness. "Move back, unless you want the backwash to catch us."
His warning helped bring the navigator back to his senses. Ruggalo proved impossible to rouse. He had retreated into some private hell of his own. Kaladin forced him to his feet and dragged him away. Had Gundrum's ship been a crude planet-to-planet vessel, relying solely on a reaction motor, nothing could have saved them from its exhaust as it took off. But it was not. Like every other interstellar craft, its mass was reduced by controlled inertial fields. An incongruously small thrust was enough to lift it off an Earth-sized planet. Splashing over the wet ground, they felt a wave of heat hit them as white brilliance surged from the ship's twin Venturi. It accelerated, became a dot, and then vanished. Ruggalo had stopped gibbering now. He was crooning to himself instead. They splashed their way through a shallow pool towards the wandering star. Suddenly, a noise made Kaladin look back. Having been rejected by Angelica, the frog-faced creatures were crawling all over one another, gripping each other tightly until they were one heaving mass. They appeared to be in a mating frenzy. The beasts harnessed to the carts were aroused too. They threw back their heads and uttered chugging sounds. The navigator turned away, choking back his revulsion. With difficulty, he and Coiler got Ruggalo to the control cabin, where they laid him on the pallet bed. Kaladin tried to speak to him, but got no answer. He didn't seem to know where he was.
"It's the horror of it," Coiler said in a neutral voice. "Some people never recover. They go mad and stay mad. Luckily, it wasn't you. We need a navigator."
Kaladin rounded on him.
"Why did you help us? What do you want?"
Kyler looked sour.
"I want to get out of this place. Out of the eye. And I hope you do by now as well. You're a fool if you don't. You will take me with you, won't you? I'd hate to be stranded here."
He paused.
"As for why, I should have stayed away from Gundrum in the first place. That's all."
Kaladin cast him a suspicious glance and then moved to the utility cupboard and rummaged around until he found Ruggalo's apothecarian chest. It was not well stocked, but he found a little box of calming balsam which, if used with the proper invocations, could sometimes relieve mental stress. He applied the yellow cream thickly to Ruggalo's forehead, muttering the appropriate spells. It appeared to have some effect. Ruggalo's eyes closed. He fell into a deep sleep. He turned back to the eye trader.
"What was that? That thing that came out of the big man's head?"
"It was not a thing. It's a person. His name's Gidane, one of our group, originally. 4-4 was always bullying him, always dominating him. Until, in the end, Gidane was absorbed by him altogether." He shuddered. "That's the sort of thing that can happen in the eye. Gidane was a friend of mine," he added, as if by way of explanation.
Kaladin found Coiler's explanation so repulsive that he couldn't even react to it. It was too much for his imagination.
"Tell me about Angelica," he pressed. "I know she's a demon, but why does Gundrum call her his sister? And she call him brother?"
"The original Angelica was Gundrum's sister," Coiler told him. "The demon possessed her, though she was far from unwilling. Angelica still exists, I think, but her personality is buried, subservient to the demons. There are so many kinds of demons, but this sort is known as a demonette, a child of Slaanesh. Angelica has kept the name, a little joke on her part.
Slaanesh, what's that?
Coiler made a wry mouth.
Do you really want to know? Slaanesh is one of the lords of chaos. Yes, there really are chaos gods. Are you happy to know that? You shouldn't be. This one is the god of decadence and unbridled pleasure. The creatures on this planet seem to worship him, at any rate. A Slaanesh power must have led Gundrum here. Through Angelica, of course. She acts as his pilot, though as you've guessed, she's not a navigator. She doesn't need to be. Here in the Eye of the Warp is her natural environment.
What did the aliens want from her?
Coiler sighed, as if having to explain things to a slow-witted child.
Their price for the goods they were offering was to be pleasured to death by Angelica, just as your friend nearly was. They are incurable hedonists.
How can you know that? Gundrum said none of you had been on this planet before.
It's quite obvious that they are worshippers of Slaanesh, Coiler said, sounding contemptuous of Kaladin's ignorance. And that they know Angelica is his demonette, a giver of indescribable delight, a bringer of joyous degradation. Your friend might understand those titles after what he's been through.
But the aliens already know what Gundrum wanted. They came to him with carts loaded up.
That's how things work in the Eye, often. It's useless trying to explain it.
A groan came from the planet. Ruggler was waking up.
Angelica! Angelica!
Kaladin hurried to him.
It's all right. She's gone. She can't hurt you.
Ruggler raised his head from the bed. His eyes were mazy, as though he were struggling to return to reality.
You don't understand. I wanted her. I wanted her to do it to me.
Kaladin's abdomen crawled as he remembered how, quite against his will, he too had been inflamed with a desire to experience dismemberment by the demon-transformed woman. Lurching from the pallet, Ruggler turned his face away from the other two, trying to hide his humiliation. As he did so, his gaze fell on the external view screen. The frog people had finished their mass mating. They stood around among the trade goods that had been strewn around. Among them were dozens of crystals about the size of a man's head. They seemed to fizz and sparkle, as if charged with energy. One by one, they were popping and disappearing with quiet explosions, leaving sherbet-coloured smoke. His eyes gleamed.
Trade goods! They'd be worth something if we could get them back to the Imperium.
You haven't got what the aliens want in return, Kyler informed him dryly.
You don't give anything to aliens. Aliens are owed nothing. You take. We got weapons.
This was a lesson he had learned while travelling with his rogue trader father. Coiler appeared unimpressed.
Forget about robbing them. They may not be as helpless as they seem, and right now they're frustrated and annoyed. You have a more pressing problem getting out of the Eye, which I strongly urge on you as a course of action.
Ruggler was no longer sure he wanted to get out of the Eye. It was a fascinating realm. It had pleasures to offer. New ways to live. Suddenly, the edge of the strip of land where the aliens were situated gave way. Aliens, trade goods and carts were all tipped, plopping into the water and sank from sight.
Well, we can breathe underwater.
Wake up, Maynard! Kaladin shouted. You are not thinking straight, your mind's been affected.
Ruggler shook his head, as if trying to throw off a mental miasma. He muttered to himself.
Think straight. Forget Angelica, demons...
He turned to Coiler.
Can you help us get out?
Coiler spoke succinctly.
We go by the same means you came in. You followed Gundrum, right? You were carried along by the wake his ship left in the warp, in fact, as he said. That won't work in the warp normally, but this isn't just the Immaterium. It's also the Eye, where everything is driven by the Chaos powers.
So, we do the same again. Follow Gundrum until he leaves the Eye. Angelica always finds a way out. Their weight can carry you, as before.
What if they spot us? Kaladin said.
Gundrum's not interested in you. He never meant to do business with you in the first place. Giving you that gem was his idea of a little joke, as well as to curry favour with his masters, of course, though that's always an uncertain thing. Apart from that, he's not particularly vindictive.
Not vindictive, Ruggler said, vacuously.
He appealed to Kaladin.
I can't make any decisions, Pelor. I'm confused. What should we do?
You're not making any decisions anyway, Maynard, Kaladin told him firmly. You're not mentally competent just now. We are leaving, and we are leaving straight away. He took one last look at the totally flat land and seascape. A wind began to ripple the surface of the otherwise calm water below them. He didn't like it here.
Lay on the pallet, Maynard, he said. Take off might be a bit rough for you, but you can take it.
He gestured Coiler into the co-pilot's seat, then stationed himself at the controls, pulling down the navigator's cocoon. Minutes later, a hissing cloud of steam billowed where the pond had been, condensing and forming a fog bank from which the spaceship, Ventura still blasting, emerged and went surging towards the sky. Once above the atmosphere, Kaladin observed the same strangeness in his surroundings that he had seen before. Space was not quite black. It was shot through with shades of dark blue, indigo, purple, violet, which wavered as though it were a heaving sea. The turbulators failed to pick up the radiation trail of the painted ship. Kaladin pulled the warp lever. There was the familiar lurching sensation as the screens came on and the ship was phased out of real space, except that there was no proper division between real space and the warp within the great storm. The 12-dimensional complexity of the combined realms ranged all around him, confusing him, driving him to the edge of insanity. He knew he would have to simplify his mental environment if the cosmic loom was to be comprehensible. At length, by a supreme effort of will, he managed to collapse one dimension after another, until, to some extent at least, he was able to distinguish one direction from another. And now he could spot the rainbow ship's trail, in the form of a long drawn-out nasal or tunnel, a bending of the abstract curves that, for him at the present time, represented the warp. The warp torrent had already seized the wandering star and was propelling it along at enormous speed. The star, which was the sun to the world they had just left, was already far behind. He had only to guide the ship into the tunnel-like deformation, and he was sure to stay on Gundrum's trail. He spoke to Coiler.
Why is Gundrum's ship so strange? That odd shape and its colours. Is it of alien manufacture too?
Eldar, maybe. It did have the typical smooth Eldar look about it, he told himself, and Gundrum had sold a Wraithguard.
No, it's Imperium made, believe it or not. It's mutated. Once it looked not too different from yours, a rust bucket of a scow, if you'll pardon the comparison. But let's face it, your merchantman isn't the latest model straight out of the fabricator's yard either. The eye is a place of changes. Gundrum's ship got made over, so to speak, all in a minute or two.
Were you there? Did you see it?
Coiler nodded. His voice became dreamy.
There were these rainbow clouds drifting about. No, not clouds exactly. More like patches of coloured light. One of them passed through the ship. When it had gone, well, she was as you see her. Everything inside is real pretty too. Completely redesigned furnishings. Though mechanically she's pretty much the same.
A thoughtful silence met his words.
None of us were aboard at the time, he went on. I've often wondered what we'd look like if we had been.
Again, there was silence.
That was a Zench world, he finished.
Neither of the others asked what Zench meant. A glowing dot came into view in Kaladin's warp vision, the signature of warp screens in action. It was Gundrum's nameless ship. He reminded himself that if he could see it, then it was likely that Angelica could see the wandering star. Then, the dot disappeared. Seconds later, they hit turbulence. There had been no warning, no way to avoid it. Ruggolo and Coiler yelled as the ship spun, once again exceeding the capacity of the inertial stabilizers. Kaladin thrashed about in his cocoon harness, the incomprehensible and contradictory signals reaching his brain translated into epileptic seizures. The reason the cocoon was there. Even in the training simulators, he had not experienced warp chaos like this. He was dazzled, unable to act, caught in a labyrinth maze, skein, jungle, vortex, tangle, tumult, ferment, pandemonium, absolute disorder. He did not know how long it lasted. He could not say. Later, whether he had done anything to preserve the ship or whether it had survived the raging cataract purely by luck. But at some time or another, the wandering star was shot out of the turbulence like a squeezed pip. Before he could take stock, Kaladin had first to stabilise the ship. How to correct a spin in 12 dimensions was a daunting problem. Kaladin ignored all questions and appeals from the others. An hour later, he felt he had done what he could. Only now could he dare transfer them into what passed for real space in the region, wherever that was. All he knew was that there was no longer any sign of the painted spaceship, and that they were further into the eye. Much further. The ship was still being swept along by the storm, of course, carried along as part of the great circular motion that enclosed, in its compass, thousands of worlds, like a demonic hand enclosing a pocket universe. To get his bearings, Kaladin threw back the warp lever. This time, the transition was smoother, less of a jolt. All three occupants of the wandering star looked at the scene through the external viewer. Splendour. During the millennia of its existence, the warp storm had not only shaped all physical life within it, it had caught up the stars themselves, reordering them into new formations, a huge spectacle of clusters and star streams, interspersed with vast veils of dust and gas, met their gaze. Space itself sparkled with colours, the colours of the warp. For Kaladin himself, there was something else the others could not see, although he was now looking through his visual eyes. His warp eye was still open. This would not have brought him much by way of perception in normal space. But here, faces, flickering in and out of existence, hideous faces. He was staggered. How could there be faces tens or hundreds of light years across? That, however, was not what frightened him most. Not that or the fact that he had lost sight of Gundrum. He struggled out of the cocoon, pushed his way up out of the pilot's seat, and held out his arms to Ruglo, an appalled expression on his face.
Maynard! We're lost! We're lost! We'll never get out! I can't see it! I can't see the Astronomicon!
Thanks for watching, everybody. That was a long chapter. Sorry, it took a lot longer than normal to do. I think it was probably the longest chapter in this book. The rest of them are relatively short in comparison. I hope you enjoyed it. Apologies for the female voice. All right, have a good time. I'll be back again with more very, very soon. Please like the video, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and do consider supporting the channel using the links below, either becoming a YouTube member or a Patreon supporter, like these fine gentlemen here. But no obligation. A like is enough. Thanks very much for watching. I'll see you again soon. Cheers.
My voice is killing me.